Shalom, Chaverim. Baruch haba l'chol mekshavim. This is Dr. Duff Forbes, Rabbi, Kehilat HaMashiach B'toch Yisrael. Welcome, my friends, to this program entitled Treasures from Tanakh. My dear friends, let me quote you some lines from the Hebrew poet Zalman Shneor. Moloch comes riding with uplifted sword, and all men acclaim him their chosen lord. So join in the shouting like fools and slaves, and let him thrust you into your graves. Truly, the sword thrust and the grave are not prospects that please, but they are abundantly more to be desired than the fate of those upon whom Moloch casts his grim and appalling shadow. By comparison, the sword is an instrument of mercy, and the grave a refuge. Horror, stark, grisly, and frightful beyond endurance, is to be associated with the name of Moloch. Moloch was a name to make the flesh creep. Of all the hideous pagan deities, Moloch was among the most ghastly. Rabbi Abba Hillel Silver has well said, "When God is dethroned, his throne does not remain empty for long. Some false god, some Wotan, Moloch, Mammon, or Mars, soon occupies it." That is the end of the quotation. Primitive man had been divinely vouchsafed an adequate revelation of the true and only God, but sin, unquestionably to be regarded as running on from generation to generation among the nations of the earth, had dethroned God. So, inevitably, from the rank and slimy mire of human depravity and superstition, there emerged the foul and fearful Moloch, who preferred his food tender and cooked. The immolation, the sacrifice, of human beings to propitiate the dark and sanguinary gods of heathenism was a revolting ritual common to many early nations. But sacrifice to Moloch was nauseatingly hideous. Moloch demanded the tenderest children, roasted alive. Among most nations of antiquity, parental power was absolute, even to life and death. And woe to the child parentally devoted to Moloch. Its screams of anticipative terror would only be equaled by the pangs of realized agony as the flames of Moloch distributed their avid lickings over the tender flesh. This horrid crime of heathenism was rife and rampant among the nations of Canaan. And even though it is true that the children were themselves depraved and contaminated beyond remedy, yet the menace of Moloch, which constantly overshadowed them, was something which called for a merciful deliverance, even if that deliverance were by sword thrust and grave. Moreover, such a deliverance would be far-reaching in its merciful extent. For if any such children escaped Moloch, they would, obviously, themselves grow up into an ultimate parenthood, pregnant with peril for their own progeny. Sword and grave would cheat the fiery Moloch of unborn generations and diminish, if not extinguish, the blood-curdling and heart-rending cries of nightmare-ridden children. This terrible circumstance of Canaan must ever be the background against which we must survey the divine command to Joshua, Yeshua, to exterminate utterly the inhabitants of certain cities. The conquest of Canaan by the armies of Israel was no mere human warfare. Let's get that idea out of our heads. It was a divine warfare against the spiritual darkness, the moral depravity, and the physical and psychological bestiality and unutterable cruelty of heathenism. If true values are to be grasped,
In the human action of Israel overcoming Canaan, we must discern the divine action of God as a warrior against sin. In Exodus chapter 15 and verse 3, we read, "The Eternal is a man of war." Let it be clearly understood that it was because of the iniquity of the inhabitants of Canaan, not because of the integrity of the chosen people, that the man of war visited the promised land. The divine command to slay utterly men, women, yea, and even children, was in the final analysis an imperative of righteousness and mercy, even though the immediate prospect was not a pleasant one to contemplate. Dr. Moorhead is undoubtedly correct when he says, and here I quote him, "It was terrible surgery, this, but it was surgery and not murder, the excision of the cancer, that the healthy part might remain." Unquote. The revelation of God as a warrior is one that pervades the entire range of our holy scriptures, both throughout the Tanakh, that is the Old Testament, and throughout our Jewish New Testament. The God of love, because he is a God of love, stands constantly with unsheathed sword against sin, mankind's greatest destroyer. God is a destroyer, but a destroyer of destruction, a warrior against wickedness, a God of battles. But his battles, though battles, are salutary and remedial, even though punitive. The shepherd of Psalm 23 is the same being mighty in battle of Psalm 24. "He that maketh me to lie down in green pastures and leadeth me beside the still waters is the King of glory, strong and mighty, mighty in battle. He that restoreth my soul and guideth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake is the same being who will not hesitate to blaze those paths with a glittering blade, that the way may be cleared for me to ascend into the mountain of God with clean hands and a pure heart." The moral character of the campaign confronting Israel had been clearly emphasized in express statement. "Defile not ye yourselves in any of these things, for in all these the nations are defiled which I cast out from before you, and the land is defiled. Therefore do I visit the iniquity thereof upon it, and the land vomited out her inhabitants." Luminous language this. The land is the wholesome stomach into which something loathsome and putrid has passed. Violent rejection by vomiting is the outcome. Better that the stomach should vomit than the whole body be poisoned unto death. The moral character of the campaign confronting Israel had also been clearly emphasized in the actual activity of the conquest of the very first city attacked. For of Jericho, Joshua had declared, "Ha'ir Cherem, he v'chol asher ba l'Adonai, and the city shall be devoted, even it and all that is therein, to the Eternal." Cherem is an interesting word. It comes from a root meaning to be mutilated, and it makes its first biblical appearance in passive participial form at Leviticus chapter 21, verse 18, in reference to the Aaronic priesthood, regarding whom none, charum, that is, maimed, were to offer the bread of God. The English translation of charum is maimed. As a noun, Cherem first appears in Leviticus chapter 27, verse 21, and refers to a field devoted as holy unto God for possession of the priests at the Jubilee. Hence arose the primary concept of setting apart for sacred use or being devoted to the Eternal, and by a still further expansion, the idea of being devoted to God for destruction gave rise to the Greek and Latin anathema. Hence, Jericho was devoted to God for destruction, and, According to Leviticus chapter 27, no redemption was possible. All must be destroyed. Only the silver and the gold and the vessels of brass and iron were preserved and put into the treasury of the house of the Eternal. Israel was thus speedily instructed that the true and righteous motivation for the conquest of Canaan was not the devouring of plunder, but the devoting of paganism, in order to clear the way for the implanting of the kingdom of heaven and prepare a ground out of which did sprout the promised Messiah, Redeemer of Israel and of all mankind. May God bless these thoughts to your hearts today, on this occasion, wherever you may be listening, that we may have a better comprehension and understanding of the motivation behind the gracious act of God in the conquest of Canaan under Joshua.
Yivarecha Adonai v'yishmerecha, Yair Adonai p'nav elecha v'chuneka, Yisar Adonai p'nav elecha v'yaseim lecha shalom. The Eternal bless thee and keep thee. The Eternal make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Eternal lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. Amen.